Everyone, welcome to Gossip Without Prejudice. My name is John. Lindsay's name is Lindsay.
Hello.
Today, we're going over Walker v. City of Birmingham. We are going to be talking about what happens when a court has issued an order you know is wrong and unconstitutional. Do you have to follow it? Can you be punished for disobeying it? And what are your recourses on appeal? Lindsay, how are you feeling today?
I'm really curious about this. I think this is a great question. I've always really loved the concept of civil disobedience. So, and this ties into me. So I'm excited to see where this goes. I'm doing great today. We've been having a lot of laughs and something special is happening.
Yes, our TikTok and our socials are absolutely blowing up. We've gotten like 7,000 new followers in like the last 10 days. We're now these days we're getting like 1,000 to 1,500 followers per day. So thank you so much if you're a new listener.
Thank you.
We were actually on vacation for most of the time when we were blowing up. So if you found us through there, we actually weren't in the office. All the clips you've been watching are old footage.
We're here now.
Yes, we are back and we are ready to go. We actually have our TikTok up on screen while we are filming this in our studio. We only have 5 more followers to 8,000. So I'll be refreshing our feed throughout and we'll do a little celebration if we get there while we're recording. Lindsay,
yes.
Tell me what was going on in the 1960s, just generally.
Ooh.
In the United States.
Oh my goodness. An extremely chaotic time, an extremely chaotic decade for the United States. The first thing that comes into my head is the moon landing. I've always been fascinated by that.
Okay,
however, the civil rights movement was much, much more socially
prevalent.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, you've put your finger on the issue exactly. Mm-hmm. We're going to be talking about the city of Birmingham, Alabama. It was, as many of our listeners know, it was one of the most significant sites of conflict during, you know, the civil rights struggle for African-American pretty much suffrage across most of the country. Mm. It's where Dr. King wrote his famous letter from Birmingham jail.
Oh.
Also where a whole bunch of people got brutalized by the police. Not a very good city. Mm-hmm. It's basically a bastion of racial segregation, the city of Birmingham, Alabama, and a place where whites pretty much terrorized the black community with acts of violence, with impunity, supported by the judicial system, the executive branch, and also city officials. In 1963, activists in the Southern Christian Leadership Conference and the Alabama Christian Movement for Human Rights launched the Birmingham Campaign, a very famous landmark in the civil rights era, which included protest marches, boycotts of local businesses, and sit-ins at segregated lunch counters.
Mm, wow.
So this is the setting of Walker v. Birmingham.
Very contentious.
It's very unfortunate. So basically what we're centered on is Good Friday and Easter Sunday of 1963.
Okay.
Activists from the Birmingham campaign participated in public demonstrations that ultimately resulted in the Walker litigation we're going to be talking about. Mm. Prominent ministers, Dr. Martin Luther King, Ralph Abernathy, Fred Shuttlesworth, were arrested for leading the demonstrations. Mm. And an interesting pattern here is you'll hear a lot of stuff about churches. This was spearheaded by the Southern Christian Leadership Conference. Churches were actually a huge center of social reform power. Like, huh. Dr. Martin Luther King had such a powerful cadence because he spoke like a Southern Baptist preacher.
Mm.
Right? He had the rolling sort of cadence that he's really famous for. Also, Obama borrowed some elements from that.
Huh.
Very powerful speaking platform. So just a quick aside.
Cool.
So this is actually during the Good Friday and Easter Sunday of 1963. This is actually when Dr. King authored his famous letters from Birmingham jail.
Mm.
During an 8-day stretch of his incarceration, a public response to white ministers who had counseled patients in the battle for civil rights.
Mm.
He was like, there were a large counterculture of usually white folks who said, it's not the right way to go about this. We support, they were doing that liberal thing where they're like, oh, we support you so much, but not this way, you know? And he was like, listen, you fucking bitches, like, we're getting hurt out here.
Yeah, this is yes or no.
Now's the time for civil disobedience. We shouldn't wait to appease the people who have the boots on our neck.
Mm-hmm.
His letter explained why nonviolent direct action was necessary, and extorting white moderates to do more to support racial justice became perhaps the most important written document of the civil rights era. Mm-hmm. Soon after, protesters in Birmingham, including school children, were subjected to violent assaults by police wielding nightsticks, attack dogs, and high-pressure fire hoses. These attacks, directed by Commissioner of Public Safety Eugene quote, Bull Connor, that was his nickname, repulsed a national television audience witnessing these events on the evening news and eventually influenced President John F. Kennedy to advocate for publicly for civil rights.
That's disgusting.
Yeah. Yeah.
I can't believe that, especially including school children. The brutality, that's not... Nope.
Well, what's interesting is that the daughter of the Little Rock Nine, mm-hmm. She's on TikTok. I need to find her handle.
Oh.
She's like 26.
Do we
realize that like her father... is just like in his 50s. He's just a guy.
Wow.
And when he was young, he had schoolmates like spitting on him for showing up at work. And those people are also still alive. Realize this.
Yeah. Wow.
Those high school students are still alive.
Wow.
Statistically, like 85% of them are still alive.
I respect the people who have lived through this and continue to fight for justice.
Yes. So we're still going through the context and the history of the situation. We haven't gotten to the actual case yet. Mm-hmm. The protesters led to a compromise within city business leaders that included the desegregation of ledge counters, restrooms, and water fountains. But racial conflict in Birmingham persisted because the people who lived there were still pretty much racist. So like,
yeah, you can institute policies, but you can't change people's minds like
eating,
that.
Eating at the same sandwich counter isn't gonna with the what was it like Kylie Jenner solves racism in that Pepsi ad that BLM Pepsi
where she's giving where Pepsi she gets, to everybody.
She gives like the Pepsi to the Black Lives Matter activist and then to a riot officer, and they're like, well, maybe this Pepsi.
Thanks.
Cures my racism.
I'm okay now.
Anyways, after the Birmingham campaign, whites carried out several terrorist attacks on African Americans, including the firebombing of a Baptist church that resulted in the killing of four young girls. Nevertheless, the Birmingham campaign was a watershed moment in the civil rights movement, inspiring similar actions in other cities in the Deep South and ultimately helping to bring about the passage of the Civil Rights Act of 1964.
Good. Your fight was not in vain.
Yes. And I, as I've said on the podcast many, many, many times, the only reason you should ever respect anyone in the judiciary is when the judiciary is standing up for people who are not represented already in the political process.
Mm-hmm.
My beef with courts over the last, particularly federal courts over the last 20 years, is that they've looked to American quote unquote history and tradition when determining the rights of usually aggrieved or disadvantaged peoples. And the problem with that is that they are aggrieved and disadvantaged if we're only looking to the politics of the system.
The history itself is discriminatory.
Yes.
And we're looking at the history.
You're inherently only ever going to protect the rights of people who are already substantially protected. Mm. So moving on, the African-American civil rights movement heightened longstanding tensions regarding the exercise of federal judicial power over state and local officials. Because basically, once the Civil Rights Act was passed, it was the judiciary who went in there and actually dismantled everything.
Mm.
Because they had legislation from Congress that now said judges must rule. And honestly, the use of the judicial branch in civil rights era struggles is very mixed.
Mm.
So in this case, we're going to see city officials abuse the federal judiciary, and we're going to see some racist judges. So this conflict was perhaps most evident in the context of resistance to school desegregation in the wake of Brown v. Board of Education. The potential for federal-state conflict also existed when local officials attempted to suppress public protest activities through the use of court injunctions,
mm-hmm.
which is exactly what will happen here.
I have a super quick question. Do you know what year Brown v. Board of Education was?
Oh, caught me right...
right in the middle of a drink of a delicious Spindrift.
Right in the middle of another point. Let me look that up.
Oh, okay. Yeah, we're talking about here, the Civil Rights Act was 1954. Brown v. Education.
Yep.
Brown v. Board of it. That's so much earlier. That was 10 years ago, and this is still something that they're... Oh, yeah.
Yes, unfortunately so. Protesters barred by court order from conducting marches, pickets, or sit-ins face criminal charges for contempt of court if they disobeyed. A court challenge to vindicate constitutional rights, however, would be lengthy and difficult as plaintiffs would have to proceed through an often hostile state court system before having a chance to reach the Supreme Court of the United States, which was the dilemma in the Walker case. The most significant precedent relevant to Walker was Howitt v. Kansas, decided by the Supreme Court in 1922. Their defendants had been convicted in state court of violating an injunction forbidding them from organizing a coal miner strike. Before both the trial court and the Supreme Court of Kansas, the defendants argued that the injunction was invalid because it had been issued pursuant to an unconstitutional statute. The Supreme Court of Kansas upheld the convictions, holding that even if the injunctions had been issued in error, the defendants could challenge it only through the standard appeal process. And that's sort of, and I'll explain why that pattern will be relevant here.
I don't like that.
Another, again, in a similar case decided in 1947, U.S. v. United Mine Workers of America, the Supreme Court affirmed convictions for contempt based on violation of an anti-strike injunction issued by U.S. District Court. The defendants argued that the District Court had lacked the necessary jurisdiction to issue the injunction, but the Supreme Court upheld the convictions. So here, that all brings us to the case.
Okay.
Birmingham, Walker v. Birmingham.
There's your context, folks.
So the city had an ordinance requiring a permit for city commissions before, quote, any parade or procession or other public demonstration. A parade statute, protesting is parade. It's just what they called it back in the 1960s, called a parade statute. So, okay. Quote, any parade or procession or other public demonstration could be held in the city streets. You need a permit. In April 1963, African-American civil rights activists sought such a permit from Bull Connor, who, remember, was the dude with all the police dogs, who refused, saying, I will picket you over to city jail. Connor followed up his refusal with a telegram stating that he was without authority to issue the permit without the approval of the entire commission and demanding that no picketing take place. A few days later, city officials petitioned a state circuit court for an injunction against the protesters, forbidding them from conducting any public demonstrations in Birmingham, any parades. Public demonstrations, parades, you'll hear that. The court issued an injunction on a proceeding of which the protesters were not notified in advance and at which they had no attorney present.
Ooh, that's a problem.
Upon learning of the injunction, well, that is permitted in state court, but we'll get to that. Upon learning of the injunction, the protesters issued a statement declaring the court's action, quote, raw tyranny under the guise of maintaining law and order. They quickly decided to defy the injunction and proceed with their plans for demonstrations on Good Friday and Easter Sunday. Lindsay, that's the setup. Mm-hmm. What are you thinking?
I think that these people are brave. These people who decided to just go ahead with it anyways. The quote here, raw tyranny under the guise of maintaining law and order. Yup, that's what I see too. And I see protected speech being halted. And that is simply unconstitutional, not justice in my head. So that's how I'm feeling. I've got some anger.
So the protests that ensued resulted in several arrests, including King's. On the following Monday, the protesters filed a motion in state circuit court seeking to have the injunction dissolved on the grounds that it violated their First Amendment rights.
Beautiful.
At the same time, city officials filed a motion asking the court to require the protesters to show why they should not be held in contempt of court, a show cause hearing. The judge refused to consider the protesters' First Amendment argument on the basis they had not challenged the injunction in court before violating it.
What? Wait.
Finding the court had possessed jurisdiction to issue the injunction and that the protesters had knowingly disobeyed it. Also, the injunction was served on 5 out of the 8 key like ringleaders. Mm. So they did. Most of them did have notice. They violated it intentionally.
Okay.
The judge held them in contempt of court, sentencing them to 5 days in jail and a $50 fine, which I'm sure is like way more in 1960s bucks.
Like $300, $500 maybe.
Yep. The Supreme Court of Alabama ultimately affirmed the convictions, agreeing with the lower court that constitutionality in the injunction and the ordinance of which it was based could not be challenged in a contempt proceeding. The protesters appealed to the Supreme Court of the United States.
So they find themselves stuck in a really, really, really frustrating spot where they know that this is wrong, but the court keeps telling them you're fighting it wrong.
Well, here's the timeline. The court only told them once.
Right.
The court said you can't protest. And actually, I didn't read you the language of the of the injunction that the Alabama state court issued, but it was very broad. They couldn't, it wasn't that they couldn't just not picket. They couldn't hold press conferences. They couldn't, they couldn't write leaflets. It was extremely broad. It basically stopped all political speech.
Suppression. Don't like it.
But the analysis of the Alabama Supreme Court was like, look, maybe you had a claim, but remember, you all gathered knowing that there is an injunction and you deliberately decided to disobey it. And so the analysis here is we have this contempt conviction, and at a contempt hearing, you're only there for one thing. Was there an order? Did you follow it? That's the analysis.
And that's straightforward enough that, yes, that this is there.
So now I'm going to read you from the Supreme Court. We'll put the Supreme Court's opinion in the show notes, so don't worry, you'll have the show notes.
Yep.
You'll also have the sources we're using to bring the story to life. I'm going to read the opening segment here.
Okay.
On April 10th, 1963, I'm reading from the Supreme Court, a temporary injunction was issued by an Alabama circuit court judge pursuant to a bill of complaint filed by Birmingham officials enjoining petitioners from participating or encouraging mass street protests without a permit as required by city ordinance. That's why the injunction was so broad, because they were like, oh, we don't want them organizing, basically. Mm. So they said no press conferences, no leaflets, no... Exactly. Mm-hmm. Some of the petitioners, who had been served with the copies of the writ the next morning, 5 out of 8 of them, held a press conference and announced their intention to disobey the injunction. So they knew, and they made statements saying, we know we're disobeying.
Okay.
No permit to parade was thereafter requested, but parades were still held on April 12th, Good Friday, and April 14th, Easter Sunday. Parades mean protests, remember, old-timey language.
Thank you.
At a contempt hearing, petitioners sought to attack the constitutionality of the injunction on the grounds that it was vague, overbroad, and restrained free speech, all of which were true.
Mm-hmm.
They also sought to attack the parade ordinance on a similar ground and on the basis that had been administered in an arbitrary and discriminatory manner. So they're saying, so the case of the plaintiffs here is the injunction was overbroad, not constrained, and unconstitutional. It suppressed free speech. And the statute that the injunction was based on is the same.
Mm-hmm.
City officials would grant permits for people they liked. It was basically just like a way for the city officials to decide who could talk.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And they are saying, because of all these things, when we show up at the injunction, we argue against contempt, we're like, these are unconstitutional, therefore you can't hold us in contempt. The Supreme Court continues, the circuit court judge refused to consider these contentions, stating that there had been no motion to dissolve the injunction or any effort to comply with it by applying for a parade permit. The court held that only issues were whether it had jurisdiction to issue the injunction, which it did,
okay,
and whether a petitioner had knowingly violated it, which they announced during a press conference that they knew and were violating. Petitioners were found guilty, and the Alabama Supreme Court affirmed.
So... Maybe this is a bad question, but what's stopping the Supreme Court from looking at the constitutionality of those statutes? Like, why aren't they also looking at that?
Well, they are. Okay. So the court actually goes through and offers that analysis. They say, I'm TLDRing here.
Thank you.
But they say, gee, you petitioners, you had a really great argument. This is unconstitutional. The injunction was overbroad. Maybe you got great arguments there. Maybe you could have motioned to dissolve them, but you didn't.
And you ruined it by... Right?
And then you got contempt of court for breaching an injunction, and the only thing at a contempt hearing was whether or not you breached the court order, no matter what it's based on.
And they did,
and so we're letting that stand.
Mm.
Then,
okay,
Supreme Court says, you could have appealed, and if you had appealed... that you had some really good arguments.
Mm.
We would have loved to hear them, but you didn't.
Mm.
And basically say, we affirm the state court's decision making. So wow. I'm going to read you an excerpt here. So here is the crux of the court's analysis.
Thank you.
As a general rule, an unconstitutional statute is an absolute nullity and may not form the basis of any legal right or legal proceeding. Yet, until its unconstitutionality has been judicially declared in appropriate proceedings, no person charged with its observance under an order or decree may disagree or violate the order or the decree with immunity for a charge contempt of court, and he may not raise the question of its unconstitutionality in collateral proceedings on appeal from a judgment or conviction for contempt of the order of the decree.
Wow.
So what that means is the court is saying no man can be his own judge.
Mm.
Why I actually like this outcome.
It makes sense.
It makes sense. The court is basically saying you can't just, even if it's unconstitutional, no one, no matter the context, can just say, nuh-uh.
This is wrong, so I'm not gonna.
Yeah, right. And even if it is correct, what the remedy is to go before the court and say, here are the problems, make that matter on appeal, bring it to the higher court, take it to the federal system if it's applicable, mm-hmm. if there's sufficient jurisdiction, and then fight it the right way.
Yeah.
The protesters here, the reason I love this case is because the protesters are very sympathetic.
Mm.
They have a very sympathetic cause that I agree with,
absolutely.
And yet, at the same time, they did this wrong.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I understand why they did it wrong. They faced a lot of hostility. There was an enormous amount of political pressure for the symbolism of Good Friday and Easter Sunday to be the nexus of the Birmingham campaign.
They felt a hurry. Yes. They needed to rush.
And ultimately, the protesters did win here because they got that symbolism. They got the letter out of Birmingham jail. They got white moderates on board. And they pushed through to 1964 to get the Civil Rights Act out the door.
Thank God.
I think this was legally the wrong decision, but politically the right one.
Okay.
And they did spend some time in jail. And it's kind of hard to write a letter from jail when you're not in jail. And we needed that letter to bring white moderates on board during the 1960s. So in hindsight, this all turned out okay. Why are we talking about this case? We are talking about this case because if no man can be his own judge, it is this sort of case that keeps the Trump administration from just saying, wow, that's unconstitutional, and just ignoring it. Mm-hmm. I mean, that and the integrity of the entire federal U.S. system. But it's
an important foundation.
Yeah, it's an important foundation. I bring this up because people are always like, oh my God, the state courts, how terrible. They didn't let the protesters protest. This is all in hindsight, right? Mm. This is all during a time of great political instability. It only seems like a righteous cause to us now because they won. Right? At the time, it was very uncertain whether any of all this noise was really going to even go anywhere. Mm-hmm. So let me...
Wow.
let me read another excerpt for you
okay.
from the Supreme Court. Quote, understandably convinced that the city of Birmingham was not going to authorize their demonstrations under any circumstances, petitioners proceeded with their plans despite Commissioner Connor's orders. On April 10th at 9 in the evening, the city filed a state circuit court bill complaining, seeking an ex parte injunction. That means one party. It means basically they did it without having the other party there. Mm-hmm. The complaint recited that the petitioners were engaged in a series of demonstrations as part of a massive effort to forcibly integrate all business establishments, churches, and other institutions. I love the naked racism. It's a very honest time in our lives. In the city, with the result that the police department was strained in its resources and the safety, peace, and tranquility were threatened of the white residents. See also. It was alleged as particularly menacing that that petitioners were planning to conduct, quote, kneel-in demonstrations at churches where their presence was not wanted. The city's police dogs were said to be in danger for their lives. Faced with these recitals, the circuit court issued the injunction on the form requested and in effect ordered petitioners and all other persons having notice of the order to refrain for an unlimited time from carrying any demonstrations without a permit. A permit, of course, was clearly unobtainable.
Mm-hmm.
So the what's great about this case is that the Supreme Court was like, yeah, man.
This sucks.
We would have agreed with you if you had brought this to us.
Wow.
Petitioners were served with copies of the injunction at various times on Thursday and on Good Friday. Unable to believe that such a blatant and broadly drawn prior restraint of their First Amendment rights would be valid, they announced their intention to defy it. On the following Monday, when they promptly filed a motion to dissolve the injunction, the court found them in contempt, holding that they had waived all their First Amendment rights by disobeying the order. Because they disobeyed it, then they motioned. You must obey and motion first.
I see. That's so frustrating. One misstep put them in such a difficult place.
Yeah.
And I mean, in the end, it worked out, thank goodness, but... Ugh.
Yeah. So let me keep reading.
Okay.
These facts lend no support to the court's charges that petitioners were presuming to act as their judges in their own case. No man can be his own judge. That's a very famous line. Or they had a disregard for the judicial process. They did not flee the jurisdiction or refuse to appear in Alabama courts. Having violated the injunction, they promptly submitted themselves to the courts to test the constitutionality of the injunction and the ordinance it parroted. Because remember, it was indefinite, no protesting, no press conferences, no leaflets, no demonstrations, forever.
No justice.
Yeah, it was not narrowly tailored.
Wow.
On the contrary, some cases have required that a person seeking to challenge the constitutionality of a statute first violate it to establish their standing to sue. Indeed, it shows no disrespect for law to violate a statute on the ground that is unconstitutional and then to submit one's case to the courts with the willingness to accept the penalty if the statute is held to be valid.
Okay.
So the court is saying that sometimes because of something called standing, which is to say very quickly, you have to be impacted by an issue to actually sue. You have to sustain some injury or to be imminently about to sustain some injury in a credible manner.
Involved in this somehow.
Yeah. And so the court's saying that, like, yeah, sometimes that happens. Like, you must violate it. But the key here is that you submit to court jurisdiction. Mm. You must appear before the tribunal, and the tribunal must hear your case. You can't hear. You can't just say, "Nuh-uh, yeah," and then just leave and do whatever you want. The court concedes that the generality of the language contained in the Birmingham Parade Ordinance upon which the injunction was based would unquestionably raise substantial constitutional issues concerning some of its provisions. That concession is well-founded but minimal. I believe it is patently unconstitutional on its face. This is the court reading.
Okay.
Our decisions have consistently held that picketing and parading are means of expression protected by the First Amendment, and the right to picket or parade may not be subjected to the unfettered discretion of local officials.
Love it.
Although a city may regulate the manner or use of its streets and sidewalks in the interest of keeping them open for movement of traffic, it may not allow local officials unbridled discretion to decide who shall be allowed to parade or picket and who shall not, which is what was happening. Birmingham was basically giving, in various ways, just giving them a bureaucratic runaround and issuing permits to everyone else really easily.
I see. So the Supreme Court is really coming in and saying the right thing here.
Yes.
Yes, this statute is unconstitutional.
Yep. Interest for the use of the public and time out of mind have been used for purposes of assembly, communication between citizens, and discussing public questions. Such use of the streets and public places has, from ancient times, been a part of privileges, immunities, rights, and liberties of citizens in ordered societies.
Oh, yeah.
The privilege of a citizen in the United States to use the streets and parks for communication of views on national questions may be regulated in the interests of all, but it is not absolute but relative and must be exercised in subordination of the general comfort and convenience and consonance with peace and good order. But it must not, in the guise of regulation, be abridged or denied.
Okay. There you go. Beautiful. So is this... What happened with the statute after this? Maybe I'm jumping ahead too much, but then did the Alabama state government say, oh shit, we need to get that off of the books?
That is a story for another time, but very basically the state government fought this forever.
Really? Ugh.
Well, or for the foreseeable future. The passage of the Civil Rights Act did make progress, but it took a lot of court battles. And even outside of judicial activities, a lot of courts, like a lot of legislatures in the Deep South, just dragged their feet. Even when it was passed at the local level or struck down, they were still sort of like the good old boys, like informally enforced them. So the messy answer is, yeah, it was struck down shortly thereafter. But the true answer is much more nuanced than that. It was a slog for some time there.
Wow.
Thereafter.
And arguably still is being slogged.
Yes, arguably so. I mean, the thing about the legal system is that it's very easy. Like, the legal system and reality often clash. Like, what you could prove in court and what's true are usually two different things.
Because in court, we try to get things as defined as possible, right?
Yeah.
And to try to have very consistent, very fair modes of operation. But then once you get into the real world, it's so much harder to actually implement that consistently.
Yes. And so...
It's unfortunate for these people. It sucks.
In a 5-4 decision, I'm going to read you details of the case now.
Okay.
The Supreme Court affirmed Birmingham protesters' convictions for contempt of court. So this was actually a loss for the protesters.
Mm-hmm.
Justice Potter Stewart wrote the court's opinion, which was joined by Justices John Marshall Harlan, Hugo Black, Byron White. God, I love these names. Tom C. Clark. And you'll notice the when we did Wong Kim Ark, this is a way easier opinion to read.
The language
gets less and less incomprehensible over time.
Good. It's about 70 years later.
Yeah, it still uses pretty incomprehensible language, but it's much less ye olde incomprehensible.
Good.
The majority acknowledged that the injunction in the city ordinance on which it was based might be unconstitutional, but unlike Alabama courts, faulted the protesters for not attempting to challenge the injunction in the state before violating it. Now, I'm going to talk to you about Chief Justice Earl Warren and Justices William Brennan, William Douglas, and Abe Fortas voted to reverse the convictions, with all but Fortas writing dissenting opinions. So this is actually quite a long opinion, but only because like every fucking person was disagreeing. Warren emphasized his belief that the protesters should be treated no differently from someone who had violated a statute in order to test its constitutionality in court, which is common practice and was often required in order to bring a legal challenge. The Birmingham Ordinance clearly violated the First Amendment by circumscribing basic forms of expression. Warren asserted the injunction therefore transformed the command of an unconstitutional statute into an impregnable barrier, challengeable only but what likely would have been protected legal proceedings. So I actually strongly disagree with this take. I don't think that, because think what would happen if you could just ignore orders you felt was unconstitutional, what would happen to the system?
The system because, would collapse.
Because these guys might have been right. But like everyone thinks...
Yeah,
everyone thinks.
What if it
wrong.
Was a white supremacist group?
Yeah.
What if everyone... they were fighting for increased segregation? And that's
The city's tactic, Warren does acknowledge, was a gross misuse of the judicial process designed, quote, to make it possible to punish the petitioners for contempt rather than for violating the ordinance and thus to immunize the unconstitutional statute and its unconstitutional application from any attack. So Warren's concern here is valid. Mm-hmm. In this political climate, if they could just rush to court to get contempt, then how, and you can't challenge the contempt order by breaking it, then he might argue there's a situation where you get in a catch-22 snake eating its own tail situation where you it basically just immunizes the local statute that's horrible. Luckily, that doesn't happen here. Justice Douglas agreed that the Birmingham Ordinance was blatantly unconstitutional and that the petitioners should not have been required to bring a court challenge before engaging in their protests. For a person must pursue his judicial remedy before he may speak, parade, or assemble, he wrote. The occasion then protest is desired or needed will have become history, and any later speech, parade, or assembly will be futile or pointless.
He makes an interesting point.
That is an interesting point, yeah. Similarly, Justice Brennan found the argument that the petitioners should have challenged the injunction first to be, quote, plainly repugnant to the principle of the First Amendment freedoms and may be exercised in the face of legislative prior restraints. Following his arrest on Good Friday... In 1963, protests that resulted in the Walker case, Reverend Shuttlesworth was convicted of violating the Birmingham Ordinance prohibiting public demonstrations without a permit. He was sentenced, specifically he was sentenced to 90 days hard labor and an additional 48 days for failing to pay a fine and the court costs amounting to $99, which I'm sure is like enough to buy a house in 1960s bucks. His conviction was reversed by the Alabama Court of Appeals, but then reinstated by the Alabama Supreme Court. Big L. In Shuttlesworth v. City of Birmingham, 1969, the Supreme Court of the United States reversed the conviction, striking down the statute on First Amendment grounds. So a couple of years later, it was challenged directly and it was struck.
Took some time, but they got there.
Yeah. The law, wrote Justice Potter Stewart for the majority, quote, fell squarely within the ambit of the many decisions of this court over the last 30 years, holding that a law subjecting the exercise of First Amendment freedoms to the prior restraint of a license without narrow, objective, and definite standards to guide the licensing authority is unconstitutional. So when you can restrict First Amendment rights in the name of various compelling interests like public safety, it's you can't shout fire in a crowded movie theater. We'll talk about that case another time.
Totally.
But basically, it has to be narrowly tailored.
It has to be definite.
It has to be definite, clearly defined, not overbroad, usually with a time limit or a scope. Courts are very hesitant. There's strict scrutiny when it comes to suppressing constitutional rights. So they can sometimes be suppressed.
Okay.
The language of the Birmingham Ordinance was broad and vague, giving the commission unlimited discretion in its application. The court cited the factual record in the Walker case to show that the city authorities would not have issued the Good Friday protests a permit under any circumstances, thereby demonstrating that the ordinance was not being applied objectively. Mm. So, like, you do often have to get parade and protest permits in various cities across the country, but they can't pick who they issue them to. Mm. It's for the name of public order, or, like, making sure all your streets still function. Mm. And generally, cities will work hard to make sure that they can accommodate something because they don't want to get in trouble with the First Amendment rights.
The Supreme Court.
Yeah. Though in the United States, First Amendment rights are much more powerful here. In Canada, there have much more constrained free speech rights at the federal level. Yeah, and the federal government of Canada is also much more powerful than the federal government of the United States when it comes to its relations with the provinces.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, I guess that makes sense looking at it from historically. Like, we were an assembly of states, whereas Canada was sort of one entity.
When the federal government of Canada was being formed, they were watching the Civil War.
They knew that they needed
or the lead up to the Civil War. And the federal government of Canada is much more powerful because it can crush it. The idea was that, like, we don't want to provide so much autonomy to local officials that they can secede. That was the historical context. Since then, politics has evolved significantly, but they were watching the Civil War where states were running the country.
And so maybe soon, eventually, they'll be the 51st state.
Oh, God. Ugh, great.
So stupid.
The Walker case is often cited by legal scholars and is an example of the general rule that a party may not raise a challenge to the validity of an injunction in a contempt proceeding after violating the injunction. That's one of the takeaways. Mm. The case is significant for reasons going far beyond the basic legal rule it embodies, however. It arose from one of the most significant events of the civil rights movement and provides insight regarding the tactics of local officials used to obstruct protests and maintain racial hierarchy, as well as the difficulties of civil rights protests faced not only in state courts, but before the federal judiciary. And it established that, like, no man can judge his own matter, mm-hmm. which is a very powerful takeaway, particularly today. It's cases like this that restrain the federal government when it has very different interpretations of the law than the petitioners whose rights it will impact when it acts. Mm-hmm. And thank God for it.
Yeah.
How are you feeling, Lindsay?
Coming out of this, you know, it really, it's unfortunate and it sucks to hear about the suffering that these folks had to go through themselves to achieve this. But coming out of the end here, you know, almost a century later, it feels like.
It feels like,
It feels like. Not quite a century, but it feels like a century. It's just, thank you for your hard work. Thanks for fighting for justice, folks who went through this. And it's interesting to see, you know, I don't personally have legal experience, but on this podcast, we're going deep into the background of why the structures that we have now exist. And it's really fascinating to me to really look at this in an analytical way. And I hope you've enjoyed doing this as well. So.
Yeah, absolutely. And two things to wrap up this episode. Mm-hmm. While we were in studio, we just passed 8,000 followers on TikTok. 8,030, actually.
We actually shot
significantly past it.
We love you.
Yes, thank you so much, guys. This has been incredible. Go to gossipwithoutprejudice.com if you want to support us. Thank you to our sponsors, Hemet Law and Quimby Bar Prep. We'll be putting up more clips on our socials as soon as possible. We're trying to pump out as many as we can. Final shout out. Kenzie is the daughter of one of the Little Rock Nine. Her dad was one of the original desegregating students. And her tag is Kenzie Key Mag. That's K-E-N-Z-I-E K-E-Y M-A-G at Miss USA 2 MBA on Instagram. And she talks about her experience and her dad's experience growing up during the civil rights era. And she also fucking looks amazing. This girl has amazing hair. I love her glasses.
Nice.
She fucking looks amazing in every single video. Go watch her stuff. Yeah. She's got way more followers than we do.
Super curious.
And it's kind of crazy knowing that civil rights is not behind us.
Yes. It feels, why the hell isn't this behind us?
Well, it feels behind us because often Martin Luther King and his followers were often photographed in black and white.
That's a good point.
Yeah. And it makes it feel like it was longer ago when full color was usually fully available in the 1960s, both in print and on television.
Interesting.
And I think it's a really interesting tactic that most textbooks only use the black and white.
That is very interesting.
Yeah.
That's something worth picking apart.
A lot of media. Yeah.
Mm.
I don't think it's a conspiracy. I think it's just very interesting and it makes it feel more.
Yeah,
more
a tendency.
In the past.
Probably not a conspiracy, but is there any reason? Are there multiple? Maybe it's like the textbooks they didn't want to print in color. I don't know.
Well, and it's interesting because ultimately we killed and assassinated most of the civil rights leader of the 1960s era, Malcolm X, Dr. Martin Luther King. Robert F. Kennedy Jr. We killed all the notable figures, and because of civil rights opposition was the primary motivator for a lot of the political ones. Mm. And so I always think about that when I think about who America is. You know, I always hear people saying, "Oh, this isn't us. This isn't us." And I'm like, I don't know. We killed a lot of people who were fighting for justice.
Sounds like us.
But like the bus boycotts, we learn about them in school. They took like 5 years, right? They didn't go on for like a month.
That's a long time.
Yeah, it takes an enormous amount of effort to organize and see results. We read like, oh, the boycott started and then Rosa Parks and then they won. Mm-hmm. But that was a long time. Also, Rosa Parks was not the first person to sit at the front of the bus. It was actually Claudette Colvin. Arrested on March 2nd, 1955, a full 9 months before Rosa Parks' famous act of civil disobedience.
Wow.
And she just didn't, and it amounted to nothing. She got no,
publicity.
Got no publicity.
I've never heard of her before.
Yeah, 15 years old. Yeah.
She was 15. She was so young.
Yeah, 15 year old Claudette Colvin.
Young woman.
Yeah, she was traveling home from school when the bus drivers ordered her, along with three fellow black students, to give up their row of seats to a white passenger. Colvin's friend obliged, but she refused. Mm. At school, she had recently learned about abolitionists and later recalled that, quote, It felt like Sojourner Truth was on one side pushing me down, and Harriet Tubman was on the other side of me pushing me down. I couldn't get up.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's beautiful.
And then she was forgotten and never credited, and then Rosa sat down 9 months later, and then everyone was like,
what the heck?
Go, girl. And again, people act like civil disobedience and organization is an incredible act of bravery. Mm. And it's an incredible act of bravery because the chances are you won't get recognition for it and your story will be sad.
Yeah, it'll just
And nonetheless, Americans should and do stand up all the time anyways. And honestly, that gives me a lot of hope.
Me too. I love civil disobedience.
All right. And with that, we'll wrap up this week's deep dive. Everyone, thank you so much for listening. And thank you so much for all the new listeners. There's way too fucking many of you. If you want us to cover new LTBE topics on our socials, please, the July bar is not far around the corner. Comment on our social media clips. We read most of them. Some of them are kind of stupid, but we read them anyways.
Yes, we do.
Yes. So please leave them there and we will be very happy to tailor our LTBE clips to what you guys are studying and struggling with. Thanks so much.
Thank you. Bye.